listening to On the Couch with Carly. Carly's couch is a safe space to talk. I'm a psychologist, but I'm not your pipe-smoking, tweed-wearing stereotype. Hello, and welcome back to On the Couch with Carly. Today, I have a massive topic, and I'm not even sure exactly where I'm going to go with this. It's going to be an unfolding conversation. As always, please help me continue this conversation. You can get a hold of me on Instagram or on email and share your thoughts about what we're speaking about, but also anything else, any other questions you have, as always. So last week, it felt like almost every mother that I see as a client came with this predictable narrative, this narrative that I've known since I first started, well, since I first became a mom, but then also when I was developing Oh Baby WTF with Genevieve. It was one of the topics that we discussed. It's just such a relevant topic. And in the 6 years that I've been a parent, it hasn't shifted all that much. And that is this notion of the lack of equality when it comes to the division of labor when you have a child. And so the moms in my practice were coming to me with these typical stories. And I want to just lay the foundation of like, what do I hear from moms? What are the most common complaints or issues that moms have, and how I see that playing out? And I also just want to say something about gender. And that is that in my practice, the majority of my clients are heterosexual, and a lot of my clients are moms. And so I'm definitely saying this from a place of heteronormativity, and I am aware that that's the dominant theme here. But I had someone in my DMs tell me about their experience in their same-sex lesbian relationship, and that they experienced the exact same thing. And so it's possible that this is not just a gendered thing. So we'll get into that in a bit, but let's just say what I'm seeing again and again is moms being exhausted by the mental load that comes with being the primary caregiver and default parent. What that means is obviously there is a biological sort of context. I mean, there's just a reality of if you are the woman in a heterosexual relationship, you are most likely, because unless you use a surrogate or you adopt, you are the person that is going to be affected by this on a physical level, in the sense that you are the person who falls pregnant, the person who carries the baby, and the person who gives birth, and very often the person who breastfeeds. And this sort of biological reality tends to be the foreground for what becomes a disproportionate responsibility for childcare in more ways than just this physical reality. And this question of why is so interesting. So on the one hand, there's probably a sort of reality that is hard to escape. So if you are the one that's breastfeeding in the early days, newborn babies breastfeed round the clock every 2 to 3 hours, day and night. And that means that that little baby is attached to your body for most of the day. And so what happens is, without really even thinking about it or planning for it, you are on duty more than your male partner. And then what happens is because you're on duty more than the male partner, you get used to your baby and your baby gets used to you in a way that it doesn't with the male partner because it doesn't have as much time with that person or being physically connected to that person or needing that person in the same way. And so this sort of tends to predict how involved dads are at a later stage as well, because those early foundations are set, and it is an incredible task to then, when the opportunity arises, when breastfeeding is no longer as sort of important or takes up as much time, then it would take a huge effort for a dad to insert themselves into the baby's life to equalize the amount of time and energy and effort that is put into taking care of meeting the needs of the baby. What is most common is that dads take a back seat and the really good ones play a supportive role in the sense that they will help mom and they'll maybe take care of some of the household tasks and they will maybe do nappy changes and maybe do burping. But what often happens is mom just ends up doing the lion's share of the labor that has to do with childcare. It just is what happens. And we also know that there are social scripts that we get, you know, and I think this does feel like a gendered topic, but I find it really fascinating to think about, like, even if it wasn't gender, what are those social scripts? So on the one hand, we know that, like, this is quite a new experience that dads are even involved at all in taking care of babies and children. I mean, it wasn't that long ago where it was not expected for fathers to really have anything to do with their children's day-to-day sort of caring. It just wasn't expected. I mean, it wasn't that long ago where dads weren't even expected to be at the hospital when moms were giving birth. You know, these things are relatively new. So there is like a societal expectation that is on dads less. And so now the current generation of dads, them just being around, them just having any contact with their babies or being capable of changing nappies or being prepared to soothe their babies when their babies aren't distressed or carrying their babies in baby carriers, all of that is celebrated as like, wow, this dad is so hands-on. This dad is so amazing. Look at what he does. And to a degree, that is fair. I think we do need to like praise and encourage dads to be involved. And it does. It is something to that we can acknowledge, but it isn't. It's very uncommon that the distribution of labor is equal, and equal doesn't mean that I do everything that you do or that you do everything that I do, but that the tasks are shared between us. So that if I'm doing the breastfeeding, you're doing the burping and the changing and the sorting of the nursery or whatever it is. That isn't often the case. Often the case is that mom is doing the majority, the lion's share, and dad does a little bit here with what he can. And we know that there are financial reasons for this as well. So obviously in like countries like Scandinavia, there is the most wonderful policies around parental leave, and there's a lot more equality there where dads will get as much leave as moms, and they get a lot of leave, and they can take off, you know, up to like a year or even more of their from work, and they get paid to just look after their children, which is incredible. And it really encourages dads to be hands-on and involved in to the same degree as a mom would. But in our country and in the States, it's very common that dads only get a few days of parental leave and then they have to go back to work. And so for the most part, if you're in a heterosexual relationship, the moms are at home with babies and the dads go to work. And that sets up another thing, which is this idea of the default parent. And the default parent is the parent that is expected, but in a non-verbalized way. So it is not something that is said out loud. It's just an expectation. It's an unsaid expectation that that because you are there for most of the time, that your job is to be there. And the other parent, the parent that gets to go to work, has the freedom of movement to come and go. And that work and extramurals like sport, leisure activities, social activities, they are activities that the father gets to take part in because there's this acknowledgement that mom is at home with the baby and therefore there is someone on duty, someone who's taking care of the child. The child's needs are getting met. And so the dad has more freedom to do what he wants to do and needs to do. And so all of this is the context that sets up this feeling, which then hits moms at some point postpartum, where they suddenly realize that only are they doing the most when it comes to their children, but they are also lacking in certain freedoms. Because as a default parent, if you want to do something away from the home, or if you want to get time away from your baby, which I absolutely encourage, I think we all need to do that. It's important. You have to arrange for it. You have to explicitly ask for it. Because you're the default parent. It's just expected that you will be there unless you state otherwise. Whereas the dad's default is to carry on with life as usual. And the baby doesn't necessarily change his entire world. His world operates pretty much as it did. He just has an added sort of set of needs to put on top of what he's already doing. And then there's the mental load that we also don't really understand until we're in it, which is that as the mom who is now the default parent and the one taking on the majority of the tasks, because the setup is that dad goes to work, dad does things outside of the house, mom's at home. I'm talking really in the early days when there's maternity leave. On top of that, on top of being physically more present, physically more of the provider to the baby's needs, on top of that, mom also tends to be the person who does the thinking, the planning, the researching, the reading, the scheduling. So there's a whole list of tasks that are subtly handed to mom, or mom takes on, let's say. I don't even know if they're handed to mom. Mom takes on because someone's got to do it. And also because there are the scripts that we get as mothers. So this is really important, is that as if you think about like socialization as little girls, you are literally told from the time you are a child yourself, like a baby, that taking care of babies is your primary function. So we give little girls dolls. We ask little girls how many children they're going to have. We read them stories about people getting married and having babies, as if that is the only achievement that women can aspire to. Of course, that's not entirely true now. And of course, we live in a much more egalitarian society where women are expected to participate in the workforce and have dreams and ambitions and careers. But that has not come at the expense of the motherhood fantasy. So women are expected to want careers and dream of themselves as individuals who are capable of experiencing careers and work identities equal to men, but we're also told that we have to be mothers as well to be worthwhile. And so when we get the chance to become a mother, And because we live in the kind of world where at the moment the messaging we're getting is through social media, and the messaging we're getting is like, you got to do it this way, you got to do it that way. This is the way to be a good mom. This is the way to be there's 1,000 ways to be a good mom. We're told, we're inundated with messages about doing all the things to make us good and worthy in this job. And so we do, we take it on. We get pulled into this role in an all-consuming way. It is an all-consuming role. In fact, if I can say one thing about feminism, I think we've missed something in feminism, is that we wanted to be equal to men and be recognized as equally powerful in the workforce, and with our that our brains are equal to men's, and that we are capable of what men are capable of. And that has been incredible to see, that we have elevated our status in society to be CEOs and presidents and everything else. But in the process, we have not also done something really important, which is that I think we should have started with looking at what is traditionally women's work and elevating that to a certain level, so that, yes, choose to be a CEO if you want to, but if you want to be a mom and you want to focus on motherhood, wouldn't it be amazing if the whole of society thought that being a mom was as exceptional and important and valid and worthy as being a CEO? I think we missed a beat there. So anyway, let me get back to the scripts. So the script is, this is your job, this is your purpose, this is your worthiness, do it excellently, put in your all. And we do. We put in our all. We put in a lot of effort. But the other thing about society is it doesn't value mothers. So we're told this is important, we're told do it well, but then we're not really seen. We're not really acknowledged for the work that we do. And also, because of the patriarchy and because of how gendered these roles tend to be, women's work, quote unquote, has always been undervalued. So, a doctor was always more valued than a nurse. Teaching was usually a woman's job. Teachers are undervalued. Generally, the work that women do in society, which is mostly about caring for and helping other people, and especially parenthood, is undervalued, greatly undervalued. It's not seen, it's unseen, it's invisible. And that is really what this topic is about. It's about the invisible labor of mothers. So not only are we doing the most, but it doesn't count for anything. So when I designed Oh Baby WTF, we spoke about how the mom experiences her day with her newborn as a long, endless sort of list of tasks that are so almost banal and like seemingly easy, seemingly unchallenging, but are actually very challenging. But the husband will get home and say, "Oh, honey, how was your day? What did you do?" And the mom like can't think of one single thing to say, because none of the things she did is valued. None of the things she did feels monumentous. And that is part of the problem, is that when you raise children, the tasks that you're actually setting for yourself and accomplishing can seem really small. If you think about attachment and being a secure attachment figure to your children, attachment is built over minutes and seconds of interaction. It's momentary. It's being there when your little one falls and picking them up. It's hugging them close to your body when they have an owie. It's holding them when they're going to sleep. It's soothing them when they're distressed. It's following them as they show you something they've done. These are small, minuscule, really low impact activities. It doesn't feel as massive as like when your husband comes home and says, "Oh, I did this massive presentation in front of the whole team, you know, that feels big. And we as women who have careers know what it feels like to do big work like that. We've also been in the workforce. We've gone and done presentations. We've had hard meetings. We've set tasks and accomplished tasks that are valued in this male-dominated world. And so we get to motherhood and these things aren't valued both by ourselves and by everyone else. And so it's invisible to us as well. It's invisible we're not getting to the end of a day with a baby going, God, I freaking nailed it today. You know, this is something I always speak about. It's so hard to feel like you've nailed it because it's so hard to pinpoint what you even did, you know, and how amazing is it to change a 10 nappies or clean a punami or soothe the baby to sleep? Or, you know, it doesn't have, there's no one there to applaud you. There's no one there to give you, a massive high five. It's like, it's just so uncelebrated. And so all these little moments add up to this thing that becomes this massive task that's completely invisible and unacknowledged. And it builds and it builds and it builds to the point where at some stage you'll say, hey, what about me? Why isn't anyone recognizing that I'm taking on all this work? And no, and you're not seeing it, and you get to go to work and leave the house and have your free time, and you get to have your sport in the afternoons. And what about me? Where do I get that, you know? And where do I get the recognition? And it will feel like resentment, and it does often feel like resentment. And then it's really hard to undo because at that point, what is really required to change the context? Anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. I want to do this in stages. So I'm still just talking about why. So the other thing is that when we have the discussion around gender, I think we know the way we get certain gender scripts. We know that certain roles are given to women and not men, and certain roles are seen as women's work. But in the discussion with this person who told me, no, this is happening in her same-sex relationship, it got me thinking, and I suddenly had to sort of question my own beliefs around this. And if it's not gender, then what is it? So I have a few ideas about what it is. And number one, I think even if you are a woman, if you didn't get the normative gender script. So let's say you're a lesbian and you've always known you're a lesbian, or you've always known you're different. And when the world told you to play with little girl, with little dolls and dress up in frilly pink dresses, you were like, no, thanks, that's not for me. And traditional boys' roles appealed to you more. So you were more interested in playing with soccer balls, and you were more interested in playing with the boys on the field, and you were more interested in getting dirty and climbing trees. And you actually, even though the world saw you as a girl, were socialized into a more male gendered role, then I think that that would contribute to how you would see yourself. And when you have a child later on in life, you might feel more inclined to view your role in line with the more male role in that system. Another idea I had was if you choose to model your behavior on your male parent rather than your female parent, even if you are a woman, then I think that could contribute a lot. So if in your world, your dad was your hero, the person that you wanted to emulate in life, and so when you become a parent yourself, it is your dad's sort of way that you try to emulate, or you naturally sort of exhibit, then I think that could also impact it. And then I think it's also a personality thing. So I do think that women are more likely to be A-type personalities. I think that for the moms that come to my practice and complain about this in this division of labor inequality, a lot of them are highly capable, particularly sort of detail orientated people. And so they tend to, and we do this as, there's all these memes about this, but we tend to then form relationships with people who aren't like that. So you tend to gravitate towards someone who isn't quite like you in that way. So it's like that old age thing, that old thing of like, if you're the perfectionist, you're going to marry someone who is like completely laid back, and you will spend your entire life at odds with each other. It's a little bit like that. So I do think that there are some women who don't get that perfectionism trait. And then for them, it is a little bit easier to, even though biologically they are sort of positioned to take on more from the beginning, they don't take on as much because they aren't likely to feel responsible, to feel that it's their duty to get everything right all the time. And I think that that's really interesting. And I've had a lot of people in my DMs on my Instagram talk to me about how they just don't sweat the small stuff, So it's fascinating because if you're the kind of person who wants to get everything right and you are spending 90% of the time with your baby and your partner's only spending 10% of the time in the early days, it would require you to let go and surrender to their imperfection on the occasion when they take the baby. And someone said in my DMs, I have to not hover over him and micromanage him when he's on duty. That's the only way that I can really get the equality that I'm looking for. And does that mean that sometimes that like 90% of the time the baby gets like her foot in her poo and then he changes the nappy? Yes. And is that going to make me say something to him and potentially ruin my chance of freedom in that moment? No. And I think that's really interesting. So a perfectionist would struggle a lot harder with that. Like a person who really has an A-type personality and who really wants everything to be done properly would struggle much more to let go in that situation and let the partner do it their way. But I also think that there is a kind of learned helplessness that comes from the guy's side when he sees that his partner is so much more capable than him, or because women are socialized to take care of babies, so that probably they've had more experience taking care of babies by the time they actually have a baby. So they are more inclined to know what they're doing from the start. And the guy will see that and go, okay, cool, she's got this. I don't have to. And that, I think, is where my friend Zach, who I've had on this podcast before, his Instagram is The Real Zach Thinks Share. And he is fantastic. He calls himself a recovering man child. And he does workshops based off that book called Fair Play, where he coaches men how to shift their behaviors, because he says it's got so much to do with men being okay with being the second in command. They're pretty okay with having less responsibility and getting sort of like really no shit for it. Like it doesn't really affect them. It doesn't affect their worthiness. There's very few messages that men are given in this world that if you're not giving 110% as a father, you're failing. People don't really give men shit for not participating in parenting. It's just totally, someone said in my DMs, if a dad, if a mom goes out one evening and she's on her own without her kids, then everyone's like, oh, who's looking after your kids? It's dad babysitting, Whereas if dad's out in the world, no one asks him, oh, who's looking after your kids? It's just totally understood that mom is there because mom's the default parent, and it's normal for dad to be out in the world without his kids. And those are just the small little ways in which we, I suppose, enable a helplessness and a kind of an acceptance of the status quo, that even though we have moved the needle so much, and as modern parents are shifting this already compared to our parents' generation, but there's still a comfort in these old patterns being there and in these old divisions being there. Okay. So what we see is moms are feeling resentful. Dads are getting often not necessarily the full picture. So there, a mom is not truly communicating all that she feels, but then every now and again there'll be like an explosion where mom will either get to an absolute state of exhaustion and collapse and really just a cry out for help and just be like, I actually can't do this anymore. You need to step up. And then often that will be a conversation around all that mom's doing, how dad's not helping, and dad might say, okay, I'll do better. And then mom and dad kind of come up with a plan of how dad's going to do better, and dad will do better for a time and then slip back into old patterns again because it's so hard to make the invisible visible. So I've spoken to a few people about this and I've gotten some ideas, but here's the thing. If you want to shift this in your relationship, first of all, my suggestion is start thinking about it before you have a baby. When you're pregnant already, start thinking about this. I have this amazing course called Ready, Steady, Baby. It's a 5-session process where you watch a video that I share, and then you answer questions. And one of the topics is roles. And in that, we talk about, what did your parents do? What were the different roles? What are the roles involved in taking care of children? What do you have to do as this big responsibility of being a parent? Because it's about, again, making the invisible visible. We do need to make these things explicit. We need to have these conversations out loud to say, right, let's think about this. What actually is involved in looking after a baby? Yes, there's the physical things. Breastfeeding and holding and picking up and changing the nappy and burping and everything else. But then as they get older, these things get, they shift, you know? And then also there's the planning and there's the scheduling and who's going to take off time if the baby gets sick, who's going to take off work and who's going to take the baby to the doctor's appointments and who's going to schedule their vaccinations and who's going to keep track of when they need to go for vaccinations and who's going to keep track of what clothes they need and when you need to buy new clothes. Like, all of these things are things we can discuss upfront. Like, whose job is this? And I like to say that we should think of it like an organization. If you are gonna, it doesn't matter what gender you are, if you are an adult, you've most likely been in the workforce. And you know what it's like to be in an organization. You know what it's like to be part of a team. You know what it's like to set an agenda, to say, here are the tasks of this particular job. Who's going to do what? Whose portfolio is this going to be? And then if that's your portfolio, you're going to manage that. So yes, you might need to delegate. You might need to refer to another colleague or the other person, to help you. But you are responsible for thinking about it. You're responsible for planning. You're responsible for checking that the quality is good, So I always suggest that. And get your portfolios sorted. And you might change your portfolios along the way. But the only way to do that is if you have regular check-ins. So you've got to have meetings and where you actually say, okay, how's this going? How are you doing in your jobs? What do you need help with? Where do we need to do tweaks? Who's going to help us along the way? All of that is so important. So in this course, you get a really good preparation for having a baby. Then, once baby is here, I believe it's about making the visible, maybe making the invisible visible. So you might not know what is entailing, what having a baby entails. You might not know what the job is really about until you're in it. But once you're in it, can you actually verbalize all that you did in a day? Can you actually verbalize what were your sacrifices? A dad will come home and he'll say, oh, it was so hard today. I was, in a meeting and then actually had another meeting to go to, but I had someone that stopped me on the way or phoned me, and then I had to deal with that. And it really was hard because I had to, sacrifice this next meeting, and it was stressful. And that all seems like really relevant information for a partner to make space to hear. Your partner's having a hard time at work. I will make space to hear them moaning and complaining and airing their feelings, because this is an important thing they do in the world. And when they have struggles in this job, it matters. The same is true for parenting. The only difference is parenting feels so minor. It feels so like, I don't know, just it doesn't feel as important somehow, which is wrong. It's totally wrong. So like, I really wanted to shower today, and when I went to go shower, the baby started crying and I had to attend to the baby, and so I never got to shower. And then the baby spat up all over me, so I was covered in vomit. And it made me feel so frustrated, because in the old days, I would just go and shower if I wanted to shower. And this has never happened to me before, that I can't shower when I want to shower. And that's damn hard. How many moms actually say that to their partners? And if it happens on one day, or it happens on 20 days, are you saying it every time it happens? Or you don't, because I know what that feels like. It's like, no, this doesn't matter. This isn't important. This is so silly. I'm getting upset about something that's so silly, that's so meaningless. Like, it's just a shower. Who cares? Like, it's not a big deal in the grand scheme of things when I'm comparing myself to my husband who's out in the workforce making money, like providing for my family. Me getting to shower or not surely doesn't count, isn't as valid, right? But we've got to fight this. We've got to make that invisible labor visible. No, this was hard work. This was challenging. This was an effort. This was a loss of something. This was a grief. The same goes for all the research you do on the internet. Like, we do it, but do we actually speak about it? Do we actually take the time at dinner to say, so I was looking on Google and this is what I Googled today, and it took me down a rabbit hole and I started following this person and she says this, and I didn't know that this was the way you're supposed to look after a baby. And there seems like there's two different ways to think about this, and I don't know where I stand in this. I don't know if I feel like I'm more like that kind of a parent or more like that kind of a parent. But do we do this? Do we share with our partners how these moments feel to be a parent, to be on duty, to be thinking and planning and taking on that mental labor? I don't think we do. But if we did, if we really verbalized and saw all this as effort, all this as sacrifice, all this as labor, real labor, labor that counts as much as making that really scary presentation in front of the whole team, I think that we might shift this. I think that we might take up space in this role to such a degree that the other person gets it, that they actually see that what we're doing matters. Then a lot of people said to me, you've got to communicate. You've got to ask for what you need. And I think this is huge. I think this is a gendered thing for sure, but it's a personality thing, and it's a sort of relational style thing. If you are not comfortable with being vulnerable by asking for what you need, parenthood is going to be rough, because as the mom, as the default parent, people are not going to ask you what you need. People are not going to anticipate what you need. People are not going to think through the sequence of events that you are in and having to participate in with your own body. You have to make that explicit. You have to say, this is what I'm dealing with right now, and I need you to help me with this. I need you to think this through with me, or I need you to hold space for me right now. I need you to just comfort me, reassure me that I'm doing a good enough job. Just one of the things we talk about in Ready City Baby is love languages, and it's just a starting off point just to have a discussion around, how do we comfort each other? How do we offer support and care for one another when we're having a hard time, even if we can't really say we know what the other person feels like? A man who is working 8 hours a day and then getting to do gym for an hour and getting to come home and seeing his kid for 2 hours before they go to bed is not experiencing parenting in the same way as you, who Even if you work, and this, I haven't even got into this, but this is not even about stay-at-home moms. Like, let's say it is you're on maternity leave and you're home all day. That guy does not have any idea what it's like to be at home day in, day out with a baby and what it really takes, the emotional labor of that. Oh, that's the other topic I want to get onto. So, what is amazing about all of this is one would think that this has got to do with men being the breadwinners and women earning less, and therefore their contribution to the family is parenting. And so it's kind of like even, you work, you bring in the money, and I'll just do all of the parenting jobs. That was how it was set up originally. But things have changed, and what we are seeing today is way worse, is that moms are mostly working. So moms are doing two jobs. Crazy, crazy, crazy. Moms are working as many hours as dad, and then they're still coming home and doing more of the parenting, and they're sacrificing more of their work life because they're the ones that are being called by the school when the kids are sick. They're the ones that are being forced to take off work to go to the doctor. They're the ones that are doing all the planning and all the shopping and all the thinking and all the preparing on top of having a full-time job. And even if that is equally divided in terms of like hours with the children, moms will tend to be the ones that are thinking and planning and figuring it out and organizing it, and tend to be the ones that like will be making the house, you know, looking after the house and the household tasks more. Okay, so this is the other thing I wanted to speak about, the emotional labor. Emotional labor is really interesting because as a mom, as a parent, we are so important as emotional caretakers, and we are expected to look after our children in such a way that holds space for their emotions. And as anyone who has a small child knows, these emotions can be really big sometimes and really overwhelming. So, you know, babies and small children do not have the capacity to modulate their emotions, to regulate their own emotions themselves. And so, as parents who are on duty in that way, who are seen as the primary caregiver, who are the attachment figures, it is our job to regulate those big emotions. And that is massive emotional labor. And what I hear and what I see and what I know is that dads do not take on that labor to the same degree that moms do. And there's a number of reasons for that. One of them is the fact that children do tend to gravitate towards their primary caregiver. So if the child has experienced mom being available more than dad, it's a natural choice that mom is the one that's going to soothe me and mom's the one that's going to comfort me. And also, there seems to be, I mean, obviously, there's also societal cultural scripts around this. So, moms, as I said before, women are tend to do more emotional labor generally in society. There's this statistic that men actually benefit from marriage more than women. So, a man's lifespan will increase if he's married. A man, most men say that they are happier and healthier after marriage than before marriage. Whereas women, their lifespan is actually reduced by getting married. And most women actually are less happy after being married and less healthy because men benefit because they're getting taken care of. And women struggle because they're having to take care of men and the children. So we're seeing this. We know this already about that. This is what is expected of us from a societal perspective. But then there's this added complexity, which is that, I mean, I just have to look at my own practice. There is 90% of my practice is women. Women are taking responsibility for their mental health at much higher rates than men. Women are courageous and are prepared to risk vulnerability more than men when it comes to intimate relationships. I think this has a lot to do with socialization as well. Women are told from the beginning that it's okay to have close friendships, to talk about everything, to express their feelings, to cry. We're given permission to do that, whereas men aren't. And so that has stunted. I mean, this is one of the main negative consequences of the patriarchy for men, is that men are not permitted to be full human beings with a huge range of emotions and who are allowed to express vulnerability. And even women struggle with men's vulnerability. But what that means is that men often in relationships are not taking care of themselves. They're not getting men, they're not doing the work. They're not doing the work of understanding their emotional patterns. They're not understanding why they get triggered. They're not understanding how they were parented and how they need to shift the generational patterns. I'm not saying no men. Obviously, there's men that are doing this work and it's amazing, but it's a trend that women tend to do that emotional labor more and tend to work on themselves more. And because of that, they tend to be the ones that children are being soothed by, being comforted by, and thought about more. So yeah, that's just another element here of how this division of labor is just so skewed. And I don't have the answers. I'm not sure what the like ideal point that we want to get to as a society is, but I do know that we have to make the invisible visible. We have to speak about these things. We have to dare to speak about them without partner. We have to be brave enough to say the things that we find hard, because I think the other script that we get is that we have to be able to handle it all, do it all, manage it all. And we are suffering from that. It is not okay. It's not healthy that we have to just take everything on the chin and just be okay with these massive responsibilities and burdens that are placed on us by society, by our families, by our partners, by our children. We need to be able to express our needs and be able to say that I can't do this all. I need support. I need help. And we have to be with our own incompetence. Incompetence is the wrong word. We have to be able to accept our limitations, but also almost enforce our limitations. So I think part of the problem is that if I look at the moms around me, they just are better at doing all the things, and that's why they do all the things. But as I said before, there's a learned helplessness there, and we have to, in order to empower men to take on more and to see themselves as valued in these roles that we have traditionally always taken on, we have to force ourselves to not take those roles on. We have to step down, step back, and allow the other person to take up that space. But it is a process. And so it's going to look weird and wobbly in the beginning. It's going to look like things not getting done to the degree that you would like them getting done. It will look like awkward conversations. It will look like you feeling a bit like, oh my gosh, am I just being lazy? Like, that's such a huge thing. Moms will say to me, I'm so exhausted. I'm up all night with the baby. I'm doing everything for the kids in the day. I have no time for me. I never exercise. And then they'll say to their husbands, can you take the kids this weekend? And as soon as they do that, they'll be like, oh my God, I'm the worst mom. I have such mom guilt because I need help. And who do I think I am taking time for myself? Oh, I'm so lazy. And they'll instantly start feeling like inferior because they're not pushing themselves to the max to take on all the roles and all the responsibilities that they have before. And we have to fight that. That is part of the problem here. We are part of the problem. We have to step down and be quote unquote incapable at certain things. We have to stop over functioning. We have to under function in certain areas. It's like if you're in a team and you're the CEO, you are the CEO. You are capable of probably doing every single job that needs to be done in this company. But are you going to do every single job? And could you do it better than most people? Maybe, probably. But should you do every single job? No, it is not the best use of your time. So, can you find ways to empower those around you to take on the jobs that are just adding to you the load so that you can feel lighter to take on things or do things for yourself? And we're going to have to fight against uncomfortable feelings. We're going to have to fight against that icky sensation that says, oh, I'm not doing this perfectly. I'm not following the script perfectly. But I hope that what you'll experience sooner rather than later is a sense of relief, that that burden gets lifted off your shoulders, that that resentment starts to sort of dissipate, and that you start to feel a kind of freedom and egalitarian or equality that actually is what you deserve, which is a sense that you are just as valid in or out this role. You are just as valid if you do this role 100% or if you do this role at 70%. So these are some thoughts that I have, and I'd love to hear what you think. And if there's anything you'd like to add to this conversation, I'm feeling now that I've forgotten to add a bunch of stuff to this conversation, but we can always have another one. Let me know your thoughts. Thanks so much for listening. Take care. Bye. We'll be right back.